My name is Jenny Nichols, and this is North Texas Sharing Green Podcast, where we meet locals involved in green nonprofits, groups, and businesses that are supporting actions for a cleaner, greener world and thriving community. Today, I have the pleasure of speaking with Nicholas Bertner, the founder and director of the School of Permaculture, which holds in-person and online courses from a homestead in Plano and farm in Ben Franklin. Nicholas has a strong Jesus-centered faith, is a family man, and is an Aikido instructor who promotes peace while teaching permaculture to help people find a more meaningful and purposeful life. He directs operations at both the farm and suburban demonstration sites for the school. Since 2012, he and his team have worked on a large and varied number of permaculture projects, from farms to ranches to suburban homesteads to public parks, apartment complexes, and college campuses. He has received his permaculture education and training from some of the best: the co-originator of permaculture, Bill Mollison in Melbourne, Australia, Jeff Lawton of Zaytuna Farm, and has attended the Earthship Academy for Natural and Recycled Building Construction under Michael Reynolds in Taos, New Mexico. So welcome to the show, Nicholas.
Thank you, Jenny, for having me.
So I'm so excited to learn more about your path of green action with creating and managing a permaculture school. So what planted the seed for you to want to take some kind of green action initially?
That's a good question. And I've tried to put my finger on it over the years, and there's not one thing, but there are some bigger points than others. Right now, there's a big drive inside of me to share this part of the journey. It's kind of like, I've been an entrepreneur for a long time, since 1998. And since 2002, I've owned the same business that it's still in operation today. And it's April of 2021. And we've had a year of COVID, and that particular business is basically not doing anything financially. So it's a really interesting time. So what had happened, you know, way back in 2002, in that first part of the 2000s, was I just got burned out. My personality type is a hyper-focused, you know, stay motivated on something. And I was, as I was doing that, I got burned out on that business. And it took me some years to kind of figure out and understand different frameworks of entrepreneurship and business to turn that business, which I was the sole driver in, into like a passive income. Now, that is difficult to do for most small business owners because we're very quality conscious. We're very, you know, maybe control freaks is the right word, right? And so giving up some of my own like internal issues, making it a little bit more autonomous and having other people kind of work in, that took me a while to figure out. And when I did, passive income also means less income, at least for me in that particular business. So however, it freed up some time. And there was a series of leaving the country and coming back around 2010. And I heard the term, it kind of came to me in multiple ways. I think I actually heard the term permaculture, but I can't say for certain, on a little island off the north coast of Honduras. And I was out there looking for like a tiny little bit of an island because I was going to just go in the middle of nowhere. And while I was looking, I saw a couple there. And that couple was also looking for a tiny little bit of an island. And I think they said the word permaculture, but you know, I had no reference for it. And they were talking about how they were going to plant plants in this coral rock of an island, and then plant other plants around that plant to help like feed it and take care of it, so you didn't have to fertilize it all the time and, you know, take care of it and do a little bunch of work. And I just thought that was fascinating. And I think that is actually the first introduction into just this idea for me, right? So didn't have a name for it. I just thought it was fascinating. So fast forward a little bit, there's a couple more developments, but I was in Plano, Texas, and I had two little dogs at the time, a Shih Tzu and a Dachshund, Archie and Keo, and they're no longer with us. I loved them 15 and 17 years. I was at a dog park and I was asking this guy, I was telling him, one thing I would love to know is how to find wild edibles. And so he launches into this story on how to make flour from acorns. And I never heard of such a thing. And my mind exploded, right? I was just like, this is amazing. So he tells me this amazing bit of information and I look it up. Historically, it's been going on for a long time. And at the end of that conversation, we're leaving together. I have two dogs. I think he's got like 5, 6, 7 Basenjis. And he tells me, but you know, Nicholas, you don't want to know that. And he maybe not, didn't say it quite like that. And I'm like, what do you mean I don't want to know that? That's amazing. He says, yeah, what you really want to know is permaculture. And it's like the brakes went off in my head, like perma what? That's a very often like perma what? What did you say? And I was like, okay, all right, man. Like it was more of a respectful thing. Like, no, I want to learn wild edibles, like how to find them and how to make food from it. But so it wasn't an immediate thing where I even dove into it. But that was the first time that I truly remember hearing the word permaculture. So I was down in another country for a while, and they, you know, this was at the time when the internet in the United States, it wasn't easy to get Wi-Fi or cellular data everywhere like it is today, but it was in developing countries. And so, you had these little modems that you plug into the USB drive and it talked to the cell tower. So in a way, developing countries had the technology of wireless data, cellular data long before the United States, and it's because they didn't have the infrastructure of all the telephone lines. So I'm looking at, and so I just decided to like look up permaculture, and there was hardly anything on the internet. And the web pages that I find was on almost all, it was basically a book, you know, online. I'm just like, I don't want to read through that. But I did find a couple of videos from Bill Mollison. One was called In Grave Danger of Falling Food. And the other was called the Global Gardener series, which they're still out there online. I highly recommend people to watch them. And it was a lightning bolt. I saw a vision after I watched it. It was as if it was a moment. It was a moment, is what it was. And I saw a vision of the school. It wasn't called the School of Permaculture in my brain at the time. But I saw that. I immediately saw that there was very limited amount of educators, at least anywhere near me in the United States. And you know, today it's completely different. Just in 10-ish years, it's like there's a drastic amount of change in the world. So I find me a permaculture design course. I think a week later I take a flight, and then like a day after I land, I'm enrolled, and then that starts kind of my journey.
So for maybe listeners who don't know much about permaculture, how do you like to define it if you have to do a quick little explanation?
So I have condensed it down to a sentence, and then we can add on two sentences after that. If it's just like, hey, well, even a couple words, if it's like you're never going to talk to the person again, and it's just to get the general concept, and it doesn't do it justice whatsoever, Jenny, but it's something like, it's sustainable living, but not lip service. It's like the real deal. You know, it's not green technology in a building because it hits LEED standards. It's the real deal, right? And so that's one way. Another way is and this is probably better, a design system that works with nature to help you provide all of your living needs. So yeah, something like that.
Nice. So did you start your school teaching in-person courses when you kind of completed all of your training, or how did that kind of evolve?
You know, that's a good question. I don't think I've been asked that question before. So I did take a lot of training because I knew I wanted, I wasn't just going to be a practitioner. I knew I wanted to start a school. I had that vision. Praise the Lord for that. And so I traveled a lot. And as I traveled, I learned from, you know, some really, I was just very blessed to learn from some very well-educated people. And so I did do all of that training. And as I was kind of traveling back and forth for even more extensive training, sometime at the end, near the end of 2012, I believe, it might be 2011, but I think it's 2012, I went ahead and said, okay, I'm going to start a school. And then we just launched from there. Yeah.
Nice. So what are some of the maybe common reasons that students have taken the permaculture design course from you through the years?
That is a varied answer. And that's what I love about permaculture. Even in the same region that you're in, I would say the only consistent thing about students of permaculture is the diversity. All walks of life have come and wanted to learn. Some of the probably the most pressing motivating factors are, I just bought some land, and then it kind of diverges into two ways. One is I'm planning, right? It's kind of the safe route. And the other is I'm in over my head. I've just spent a whole bunch of money. Oh my goodness, I need help. I need a design. And those are always fun stories. And it always starts with, okay, you're here. Now stop what you're doing, or at least slow down, slow way down, learn this information. And typically those kind of rush stories that are able to be slowed down, turn around. And there's one that I always like to talk about. And basically they came in, they bought 10 acres. They were almost retirement age. Was he a Marine or was he an Army, right? So he's got drive, you know, a lot of drive. She was retired in tech. And so this was their you know, the golden years. They was going to start homesteading and live off grid and be safe from, you know, they were thinking of economic collapse and that stuff. And, you know, look, it still looks like it may happen. But so they had already started, you know, they bought the land, they were researching water, buying materials to build housing. And I'm like, hey, slow down. And she was very like, okay, we'll slow down. He was like, man, like I'll show up, but I got to get this done. I'm pressing for time. About three quarters of the way through our 6 months together, this was an in-person course at the time, he came up to me and he's like, okay, I get it. And I'm glad I did this. You probably saved us over $100,000 of infrastructure. Mm-hmm. So those are stories worth telling.
Yeah. So for people that may have like some experience with organic gardening and are just starting to explore permaculture, what do you find are maybe very important aspects for people that might live in a suburban area that have, you know, maybe a small or medium size piece of, or a yard, essentially?
Yeah, like a suburban site that is very common in lots of parts of the US and Europe and Australia, right? Canada as well. So I guess the first thing would be know your restrictions. Here where we started in Plano, you can't have chickens. Which, you know, during COVID, it's like there wasn't food on the grocery store shelf. Like, are you like, what kind of fascism is that? You know what I mean? Like not allowing people to grow their own food. So that would probably be the first thing. Know what state, county, and city restrictions there are. And then on top of that, if you're in an HOA, and I'll go ahead and talk about an HOA for 30 seconds, but if you are, there's really only two options if they're limiting you on what you can do. The first is move. And if that's not an option, then read, and I say this jokingly, but there's actually a point to it. Read a book from called The Art of War, and you become part of the board. You get voted in or voted onto the board of the HOA, and from the inside out. So the best battles are, you never have to lift a sword, right? So that would be your two options there. And if you're in that unfortunate situation, and then you decide, oh, well, I liked an HOA, but now I'd actually like to grow food. So that would be the first thing. The second thing would be, well, none of these are going to actually be in order after that. So I'll just name a few points that I would definitely do if I was to move forward. One is build an ecosystem, not just a garden with different kinds of vegetables. So in other words, like say you have 10 beds or 5 beds or whatever it is, each bed it's growing something different. I don't recommend that. That is part of the entire design. So our goal would be to integrate our food growing into an ecosystem, and that's a more natural way to do it. And I can give you some experimental data from myself. I mean, I would just have aphids and all types of insects just decimating my vegetable crops. And this is where people go turn to technology, herbicides, pesticides, all the sides. Well, those are terrible, right? I mean, the glyphosate and the atrazine, I mean, they're messing with your endocrine systems. They're turning male species into female species. They're giving humans testicular cancer. They're giving human women breast cancer. I mean, there's problems with these. So the organic version is like, you know, crush down some peppers or get some Epsom salt and vinegar. And that's still like, I'd much rather go that route, but even that's like too much. Build an ecosystem. And if possible, use your native species. So if you're in every area in the world has native wildflowers. And in the US, we actually have companies that will sell you your native wildflower seeds. So around your peripheries, and really double down on it. Don't just do a little bit. Grow these native wildflowers and grow species that like do things like create lots of biomass. So you can turn that into a fertilizer through compost. Not only that, the root system aerates the soil. They attract lots of insects. And when you hear that at first, you're probably thinking, oh man, I already have a pest problem. But no, that's really what you want. The more insects, the better. They're either preying on each other or they're partying with each other, whatever it is, but they have life cycles. They defecate in the soil. They're creating soil fertility. They're doing pollination. You're inviting the predators and the parasitoids to mitigate the problems on your plants. So that's a huge thing. Grow an ecosystem, not just a couple of beds with vegetables. And to do that properly, it's not just listening to a YouTube video or something like this. Me, take a permaculture design course. And so that's like along with that. So how do you even like get to understand that concept? Well, it starts with education. And then so, you know, a good permaculture design course would show you and help you follow processes that show you how to design to that. So those are a couple of things: ecosystem, get educated, and then have a good design. So what a lot of people want to do, like say you're in an area where you can have chickens, and so they'll put the chickens way in the back, and so they sentence them to death by neglect, especially if you have young ones, like young kids. And so it's your first time having chickens. You don't know how to protect them well. And then they're way far away from you because you think they're going to have a massive smell or, you know, maybe they make noise. Right. And so then they're disconnected. You got to, you know, check on them, you know, at least twice a day, especially when you're first learning about them. So, you know, you're not going to do it because it's so much work. Your garden area is not even close to the chicken area. So you're trying to get the chicken manure, put it in the garden or in your, it's just so much work. It's disconnected. And so, again, that goes back to when you learn how to ecosystem, you learn your fluid movements, your movements on how you operate from your house into your garden, into the work areas, and how those waste products from one another feed each other and become a sustainable, more of a closed loop system. And I say that word lightly, or say that term lightly, but so those things. And I could, to be honest with you, Jenny, I could probably go 100 other things, but some those probably are there at the top.
Yeah. So I know that you now offer online training, and you have something that you call the Pro Landscape Assessing Tool. That sounds very interesting. Can you tell me a little bit more about that?
Yeah. So we'll start with the PDC. So it's an online PDC, online permaculture design course. I think just to talk value for a second, because things on the internet, if you have no reference, a reference point, you're just kind of like, okay, this is what it is. But so let me give you a reference point. Prior to the internet, a permaculture design course, there's been a couple of different formats, but basically landed on a 12-day like intensive class. Like, so you'd take 2 weeks off, or you would do it over 6 months on, you know, one weekend a month or something like that. And it's all day long. It's not always, but typically it's lecture based. And I would say it kind of needs to be, because if you're trying to do hands-on and learn, there's really not enough time. Like, all 12 days are fully filled with information that is needed. So that course globally, if they're feeding you and you're staying on site, I mean, is anywhere from like $1,500 to $2,500, maybe $3,500 in some place. If they're not feeding you and they're a nonprofit like we are in person, you may get it $700, $800. And most of the time online, it's somewhere between $1,000. And that's to do an online experience, right? And so that's the kind of typical price range. So we are a nonprofit, and we've had some really hard times throughout the last year. And my goal is to just love people. That's really my goal, and help them. So I put together an online permaculture design course as a membership. And at the moment, I'm keeping it at $25 a month. And if you did it, if you just went on it every day, you can do it in 3 months. I will tell you, after doing this, hardly anybody finishes in 3 months. And so the good thing is it's just $25 a month. So keep your membership active until you feel you have enough. And that's the non-certification option. And then there's a certification option, which is exactly the same. And then you pay for a certification, given that you finish the requirements asked of you for the certification. With that, the great thing about a monthly membership as well is, especially if you're a bad note taker, which I highly recommend being a good note taker, is say you take the course today, and you say you did finish it in 3 months, which you probably won't, but let's say you do. Well, you won't actually get to install maybe for a year and a half later, right? Maybe, or maybe even 6 months. And you're like, well, I knew I was supposed to do something. Nicholas said something about an ecosystem, and I don't remember. Or said something about chickens. You can't find your notes. Well, what are you going to do, right? Well, or it's like, okay, $25 a month is way better than a Netflix subscription, right? And so you can go back and reference that, and also have, like we're doing it today, actually a live session, Q&A session. So you can ask questions at any time, once a week, for that very, very reasonable rate. So that's the online PDC.
So what are some of the common challenges that your customers are facing when they're trying to garden in North Texas, maybe with the climate and soils, flora and fauna?
So, and where I'm particularly at, the biggest challenge, there's two really big challenges. We're very fortunate that we have a year-round growing season if you use a hoop house here in North Texas. So everywhere in the world has something called bioregions or ecoregions, and Texas has been very good at splicing those up and then categorizing them. And so I'm in a particular bioregion or an ecoregion called the Blackland Prairie. And it's a wonderful place. I believe, was it Davy Crockett? A guy during that time period, it may have been him. He stayed like maybe a couple of towns over from where our farm is. And he was there, I think, before he went to a war or after, and he wrote a letter. And he says, you know, I'm coming back. He goes, this place is wonderful. We have massive bison migration twice a year. Food's abundant. This is obviously before all the bison slaughter that had happened. So it's a wonderful ecoregion, and especially if you're looking at grazing animals. But three of the massive issues, it's a great region, but the soil type here is extremely, it's in the one of the rarest categories. It's in the taxonomic value called Vertisol, and that's just a fancy name that says it's in a clay-based soil that was probably underwater for a long time, and it's of the highest caliber of expansion and contraction. So we're in those places where in the summertime we'll get cracks easily like this, maybe even up to a foot big in some places if it gets really dry. And then it gets wet and it seals back together. Now, historically, that actually makes very fertile soil. The problem is you can't extract the fertility out of it because it's glue, right? It's glue. So it's like, okay, well, how do I actually grow crops in that? That's a really big challenge. 2% of the world has this soil. It's in Vertisol, and then underneath that, it's in the family called Montmorillonite, which is, I guess, first found and named after Montmorillonite in France. Bentonite is in this same category, which is what they use to seal ponds because it's so colloidal and small, but when it gets wet, it massively expands. Another issue that we have is our most sensitive season, because that's what you really design for, is the most sensitive time. In most temperate climates, that's the winter, but it's not for us. We have a blistering hot summer, which can yield very little rain sometimes, especially in drought years. It gets very dangerous. There's a lot of sicknesses going on in larger livestock because there's not enough food for them. So that's another big issue is that designing for that hot time,
So what are maybe some of the ways that your customers are enjoying the rewards of taking the permaculture course? And do you maybe have a favorite story that you like to share about that?
Oh, I have a couple of stories. My students are amazing, way better designers than myself. I'll go with just a couple that are similar. What the permaculture design course does is it gives you answers, but it doesn't give you all the answers. It gives you the right questions and the right sets of questions, and then a framework. So these students come in, and I would say I don't have favorites, but the evolutions that I probably enjoy watching the most are the couples who come in. And those, what I would say, have the largest success rate. And what I mean by success rate is application after the course. And one of the things that's plagued the permaculture design course since its inception is a lot of people take it and they just sit on it. They don't do anything. But you've got motivated people, and then you've got two people doing this together where they're like feeding each other motivation. You get a lot done. So, for example, I had a Tara who came in. Now, Tara did come in by herself, but she lived a standard, what we here in North Texas, we have a lot of kind of uppity suburbs, I would say. And so that was the standard life for that, for her and her, I believe she has three kids and four kids. But it's been a while since she's been in class, but her husband, worked a standard job. They lived the typical life that people would, when you and I were children, our parents said, this is where you go, right? Get a job and you do this. And then they started traveling. They went to Costa Rica. They bought some land down there. And then they met somebody, I think, down there who told them about permaculture. And they came back and they said, look at our excessive life. What are we doing? We have all this debt to just like live this dream that's been put in our heads. That's not really ours. And it's over consumerism and just debt ridden. They sold everything and they bought 20 acres in a beautiful part of Texas. And she was taking a course. Her husband is a I guess was, he used to be a professional martial artist, right? And so, you know, he's got drive too. And they went out and watched YouTube videos. They bought 4 shipping containers, taught themselves how to weld, how to pour concrete footers. And their family built their 4 shipping container home right there, right? With the information also she was learning through the permaculture design course. And I think just a few years ago, all of that land, everything completely paid off. He still works probably from home now because of COVID, I don't know. And I would say that's a massive success story, right? Out of debt, living a free life, having healthy food. We did do a big garden stall over there. And you know, they got to teach their sons and their daughters life skills that they'll be able to take with them for the rest of their lives.
Awesome. That's awesome. So as we wrap up, do you have any special courses or events coming up that you would like to share?
Well, in person, we don't have any courses per se, but I'm in the middle of building an earth bag structure in Ben Franklin, Texas. And if you go to, I'll post it on our, I guess, Facebook page. I don't know if I'll have time to put it on our website. There's a form you can fill out. Cost you nothing. If you want to come and learn a little bit about how to build an earth bag house, come and exchange a little bit of your labor. So for the next 2 months, for the next two months, that's going to be the massive focus. And we have open slots for people. So maybe Jenny, I can give you this form and you can, wherever this link goes out, put that form there. And it's only going to be available, you know, for the next few months, but that will lead you to a place where we can contact you and schedule you at an appropriate time that we're out there and that you're available. And then the other thing would be to check out the online permaculture design course. Lots of students, lots of good stuff moving out over there, for sure.
Nice. So how would you like people to contact you, or what is your website address?
Yeah, the website is schoolofpermaculture.com. So it's 3 words, schoolofpermaculture.com. You can use the contact form there. You can send us an email, learn@schoolofpermaculture.com. And, you know, you can also just give us a call. I mean, we don't spend a ton of time on the computer nowadays, and kind of by design. So you can go to our website, find our phone number, and just call. And at the moment, if you call kind of in the morning, you may have a good opportunity just to chit-chat with someone.
Nice. And so before we sign off, as an advocate and collaborator with your local green community, would you like to share another group or nonprofit or business that you've used yourself for maybe a green, sustainable resource or service or event?
You know, where I get asked this question every once in a while, and I wish I'd be prepared so I can have like this list that I don't have to leave somebody out. You know what I mean? But the first one that hit my mind is here in DFW. There's an organization called FARM, which is Farmers Assisting Returning Military, and their goal is to stop the 22 suicides a day that happen with veterans who come home. And so they're a great organization, and I've worked with those guys, and the guys that go through their program are sometimes just friends of the group who are veterans who've come out, and you know, we work together and made some really good relationships there. There's that one.
Super. Well, I want to thank you, Nicholas, for sharing your school and your faith and your passion for earth care and people care. And it was a real pleasure to speak with you.
Thanks, Jenny. I appreciate your time. Thanks for doing what you do as well. Yeah.
To make sure you don't miss out on what's happening, be sure to subscribe for local event email subscriptions that we deliver directly to your inbox every month. And until next month, let's help make our communities a kinder and greener place for all. To learn more about this episode, check out the show notes and their directory listing in the gogreenlocally.org online green hub.